But as long as you'd love me so, let it snow and snow.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone! Welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, a clone security force goes missing. Anakin and Obi-Wan get caught in the middle of the escalating conflict. There will be Obi-Wan bear hugs, snow speeder fights, and a young woman who saves the day because she's better than all the men, so you guys can go home now. What's up, Chris?
I'm going home right now.
Bye. No, I love this episode. How are you doing, Chris?
Good. Yeah, this is a really fun one.
I like this one a lot. Better than the Lermans?
Yes, definitely better than the Lermans. I don't think there's any pacifists in this episode, come to think of it. A lot of pacifism going on in this. There's a few heads on pikes, if I recall correctly.
But even then, we never actually see the heads get put on the pikes.
But they got put on them.
Yeah.
Not by pacifists, that's for sure.
No. So this week, we're talking about Trespass. It is the 15th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on January 30th, 2009. It was written by Stephen Melching, Scott Murphy, and Henry Gilroy, and it was directed by Brian Callen O'Connell. And some nice extra story information for you, and I can almost promise you these are half of Chris's notes. Dave Filoni stated in an interview that the visuals for the ice planet's environment were black and white photocopies that George Lucas made of the Badlands, saying that the stark contrasts were what he was looking for in depicting an ice planet. Ralph McQuarrie's paintings of four Hoth concepts were then applied to the design process for the episode, but without the blue saturation of color. The stylized ice landscapes were patterned after McQuarrie's original vision of an ice planet. The snow in the episode is a very much a part of the emotional tone of the story. Joel Aron developed the different densities and types of snow to parallel the moods of the story, including the moment that, when Chuchi buries the hatchet with the Tal's leader, the blizzard breaks and the snow drifts very gently down.
Yeah, one of my notes is...
snow!
Yeah, the snow is done very well in this. Not just the snow falling, but the way the snow, like when their feet fall in it, or when they're... There's just a neat shot of their snow speeders when they have their landing gear down and how it sort of slid in the snow and pushed it aside. It's very well done. They put a lot of attention to it.
It's almost a character of its own.
Pardon me?
It's almost a character of its own.
Yes. Yes. Just like the Eskimos have over, what is it, 50 words or 80 words for snow or whatever, or 300 words for snow, something like that. They applied that.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
You would think, yeah, makes sense, right?
Yeah.
They have a word for every kind of snow and every kind of, you know, effect of it. It's their life.
Oh. Well, as always, we start the episodes with our lovely words of wisdom done in a terrible, awesome Yoda voice. And I have to say, we're getting back to some of the good ones. I like this one a lot.
Terrible, awesome, and sensual.
Bow-bow.
Arrogance diminishes wisdom in bed.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, I think we're starting to get back to the good ones again.
Yeah, we're back on track. We only had that one clunker so far.
Yeah, because all the other ones you could kind of squint and see it, but that was the first one we were just like, no. So, Act 1 for Trespass?
Act 1 it is.
When they lose all communications with the clone security force on the snowy planet of Orto Plutonia, Obi-Wan, Anakin Skywalker, and Captain Rex are joined by Senator Ryo Chuchi and Chairman Chicho to investigate. Chuchi and Chicho are from the planet's moon Pantora, which oversees the supposed uninhabited planet. Chicho flat out says that he'll do what he wants and go where he wants because it's Pandora and it's the only civilized planet, so therefore he owns the world. Obi-Wan heads to the base where a line of clone helmets are stuck on spears. It looks like some unknown force attacked, but none of the computers have been touched for information to be stolen. Rex tells Obi-Wan that there was a nearby droid base. Investigating the droid camp, they find a similar scenario where all the droids have been dismantled. Checking the computers, the last droid transmission shows some creatures attacking the bots. Back at the Republic camp, Chuchi isn't sure that it's the Separatists that have attacked their men. There's no evidence of blast marks or destroyed droids. But the chairman wants nothing of it since he's the king of everything and must be right, so therefore it must be the Separatists, so shut your mouth, woman, and go make me a sandwich. Chuchi believes that I did write that, guys, by the way. A woman wrote that. Chuchi believes that if there's a force out there that can kill their men, then they could possibly find a peaceful solution. I kind of vamped that one a bit.
I'm going to call them, instead of using the names, I'm going to call them Joni and Chachi.
Which one's Joni and which one's Chachi? Well, I guess that's a really dumb question to me.
I was starting to explain it. Yeah,
I'm going to call Chuchi by her real name because she... Rio... Call her Rio, then. Because Rio is... Because
she dances in the sand, just like that river flowing through the dusty land.
I hate you. Yeah, Rio is one of my favorite.
You know it's playing in the soundtrack right now. Woo! Duran Duran! Sorry.
So what did you think of the first act, Chris?
I like the snow armor. I love the design of the snow.
They are so adorable in their snow gear.
This, you know, I'm used to Rebels looking very Ralph McQuarrie, but this one between the snow, the terrain, and the snow armor, this is probably one of the most Ralph McQuarrie looking Clone Wars there is. So I really like that. And this one moves fast. I mean, so much happened.
This is a packed episode.
So much happened in this first act. The only thing when they said we'll make a cast of the tracks, I don't think they should have said we make a cast of. Wouldn't it be like we'll make a hologram of the tracks or something like that? You know, I don't see them putting plaster into the snow, I just don't see that. And my other note is Chachi's kind of he's just the too generalized of a prick. It's just like, is this guy really this stupid? You know,
I literally have a note in my second session that says Chicho is a bag of dicks.
Yeah, he is, and I mean to the point of where, how do you reach such a high position in your government? Being so like ignorant of what's right in front of you, you know, it's right in front. All those things are good points. That
Donald Trump, is that you?
It's beyond even that. It's not to his. It's, you know, it's, he has no reason to be that much of a dick. It's not to his advantage to be that much of a dick to not see the situation for what it is.
It makes me wonder what's going on Pandora for him to get by with all that.
It made me think, and I remember this episode, but I don't remember specifics of it. But I was thinking maybe this guy is like, he's really working for the Separatists and he's trying to like stir things up or something. For some reason, I was thinking maybe he knows that it wasn't really droids that attacked, but he wants to start trouble or something. But no, it turns out he's just a prick.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's
okay, because we have Chuchi. Rio's gonna come save the day, Chris.
Well, Joni, she's almost useless to be there. She has the opposing position, but she's powerless. You know.
That's actually one of the things that I have as one of my notes is that I love Rio Chuchi. Like, she is one of my favorites. And this episode, this is actually an episode I covered in my season one recap of What the Fangirl, is one of the best episodes of season one. Mostly because of her. Because you have to remember while watching this is that Rio is young, like super young.
She reminds me of Amidala in episode one.
Yeah, this could possibly be her first mission as a senator. Right. So, and she's smart and she has her instincts, but she doesn't have the confidence yet. And so, and she knows that something is off, but she just, doesn't have the confidence yet, which I will continue this point in.
Well, that's the thing is, I don't like her character at first, but her character has real character
development. She's so adorable. I love her. She's such a cutie.
She's adorable, but she's just sort of like, I don't, you know. But that's part of the point of her arc. So, like, by the end of it, she figures out how to deal with the situation, you know, where at first you could tell she's, like, out of her league. You know, this guy's just walking right over her.
Well, the guy's walking right over the Jedi, too.
Everybody. He's walking over. That's it. He's that kind of person. He's that person who just, like, he's got the authority, and he's just not going to listen to anybody. And as a matter of fact, anybody saying anything different, instead of listening to it, he takes it as, you know, an affront to his authority and his command and stuff, and will automatically sort of, like, not listen, like, actively work against it. So,
yeah,
kind of an idiot.
My only other note for this section is this episode is like Frozen and Pocahontas had a love child in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Let
it go.
It's got a little bit of John Carpenter's The Thing in it, too. Especially with the
show you'll die in the snow.
the beginning of this is creepy, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody,
see all their heads on the pikes.
The clones have their heads on the pikes, and then they find droids with their heads on the pikes. It's pretty creepy.
You'll die in the ice if you can't get along with the towels. No one's gonna miss you, Cho, because Choo-Choo rules anyway.
Joni does not love Chachi.
Joni does not love Chachi, and Rex is freaking adorable in his snow outfit. Rex is great. Rex is great. He's the best clone of them all. That's why he's in Ripples. I'm making this up as I go.
We might not be hearing that music in the background. Yeah.
Actually, I'm okay with that. I like.
I still Frozen. Haven't seen it for just because of that song.
I like Frozen. I just am tired of the hype of Frozen.
Yeah.
And they brought it into Once Upon a Time, which was probably one of the worst seasons ever, except for my boo Michael Sokka. And yeah. And so I realized I hated Frozen when I was shopping for Frozen things for my niece for Christmas, and I went to Verizon and they were playing it. And I went into another store, and they were playing the music. And they were playing the music in the mall. And finally, I walked upstairs and like to the thing, and I was looking at all the Frozen books. And I was like, I'm watching this every Sunday on Once Upon a Time, too. And I was just like, I fucking hate Frozen right now. But I'm a Tangled girl, though. Tangled
if I go out shopping for something Frozen, it's going to be a pizza.
I think Tangled is such a much better movie. But Rapunzel's my favorite Disney princess, so. And I'll brush and brush and brush and brush my hair. Still stuck in the same place I'm always. Shut up. I love that. I'm a Disney file. I'm probably going to see Zootopia before I see Deadpool.
Wait. You've seen Deadpool, haven't you?
Not yet.
You haven't seen it yet?
Oh, wow. Well, I was supposed to go, and then the person I was going to go with got sick, and then I got sick, and then I just haven't had a chance to see it, and I get paid this Friday, and I'm like, I'm freaking seeing Zootopia, because I've been waiting for Zootopia for years. Zootopia has Jenny Goodwin in it, and it has J.K. Simmons, and Josh Dallas plays a character called Frantic Pig.
Well, I think Deadpool will be in the, it's probably gone by the time this comes out, but right at this point in time, I think Deadpool is going to be in the theaters for a little while. It's still raking in the doughs.
Isn't it funny how like all those media giants were like, huh, who thought Deadpool would have been successful?
Yeah, maybe all the people that have been waiting years for a Deadpool movie, maybe those people would have thought.
I think we talked about this last week, actually.
Probably.
Silly movie executives, you never listen to the nerds.
They're starting to get it.
They're getting it slowly but surely.
Not complaining too much.
Well, did you have anything else for Act 1?
No, I'm ready for the action to begin.
All right, yeah. The Act 2 is definitely where it's at. Ha, it's also the longest type part of this episode.
Yeah, it was a long act, wasn't it? Act three, it was really short, like compared to the usual spacing.
It's like the normal, yeah, but also there's a lot that happens in this act. It's a very packed act. It moves. This is the pacing of this episode is fast.
A lot happens in this in the 22, 24 minutes.
This is like 4.5 Jar Jar Binks episodes.
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah.
Like this is like you could have Jar Jar talk to animals like 20 times in the course of this episode. So, sorry. Act 2. The droid base had been investigating a series of nearby caves which might have prompted their attackers. When Obi-Wan and Anakin look into it, they discover a group of indigenous people called the Tals. They're primitive, but sentient. They meet with the leader of the Tals and realize that the droids and their clone troopers must have provoked them. Returning to the base, they report back to Senator Chuchi and Chairman Chicho. But the chairman believes... I knew you were going to call him Chachi, by the way.
It was either going to be that or Chiba and Chocha, so I stuck with Joni and Chachi.
I knew that. Like, as I was watching this episode, I was like, he's going to call him Chachi. They report back to Senator Chuchi and Chairman Chicho. But the chairman believes that the Talls are trespassers because long live Pantora and all that. He claims that the Talls now belong to Pantora, but Chuchi argues that the Senate must decide the jurisdiction of whether or not the Talls can be a sovereign people. Chicho orders Rex to prepare his men for battle, and Obi-Wan says that they've already arranged a meeting with the Talls to discuss the future of the planet. Chicho says that they're animals and savages and can't be trusted. He also claims now that it's an internal affair, so the Jedi can't interfere. If they're going to meet with the Tals, they must leave before, or they're going to get caught in a snowstorm. Anakin tells Rex to have his men on standby, but no matter what, they are not going to war. They head out into the snow, to the storm, to the meeting place. The Tals are already there waiting for them and have them surrounded. Chicho meets with the leader of the Tals, and he is a big jerk face. He tells C-3PO to translate for him, saying that the planet now belongs to Pantora, and leads them into a war with the Tals. Anakin tells Rex to go with the chairman and protect him at all costs. The Jedi asks Chuchi if there's anything that she can do to stop this. She realizes the Speaker of the Assembly can petition the Jedi for an intervention. The three of them head back to the base to see if they can get a transmission through the storm. Oh, Chicho better not order my Rex around like that. I'm going to cut
that. Jeez, yeah. Well, you could see Rex was just like, alright, what do you think, Jedi?
Yeah. He was like, Captain Rex, do this. And he just turns and looks at Anakin like, sir.
This is the act where the snow really comes in. This is the act where, like, the snow action is just really great.
Let it snow. Oh, the weather outside will kill you.
Scott Gardner and I used to call the Talls cigar faces. Because there was one in the cantina in the original Star Wars.
Oh my god, cigar face!
We always used to call him Cigar Face because he has that weird. I mean, they don't talk out of it. It's just sort of a weird protrusion on where their mouth is.
Well, how else are they gonna drink their Slurpees?
I guess maybe they suck brains out of people too. That's what I like to think.
So, what did you think of this act, Cigar Faces?
I liked it. It was frustrating because Chachi's such a dick. And I was still thinking, this guy's got an agenda because, you know, he don't even know these Tau people. You know what I'm
saying?
They
can have, like, crazy psychic powers.
He's just instantly like, oh, they're animal. You know, there's so many clues that they're intelligent. Like, they have a civilization and a language, you know, instantly that it's like, there's no reason for him not to let them be, you know, there's no reason, even if they own the planet, they can own the planet and just not tell the Tals, and the Tals won't care. They'll just go about their life. It's not. And they were sort of they were sort of letting on that there wasn't really anything, you know, the planet didn't really have any like valuable ore that they had to mine, you know, or tactical value or something.
Yeah, because Chicho even says, like, we've studied this planet for a long time and we've scouted out this planet. And
it's just useless. So who cares if they own it or not? You can own it and say, okay, then you can slap your name on it on a map and say you own it. But nobody really cares about it. Nobody wants it. So really, he should be just like to the Tals, hey, glad to meet you. say, I don't want anything, and then get the hell off planet and go away, and then they still own the planet. And if they ever have to mine it, I guess they could go militarily take it over or whatever from the Tals. But at this point, there's really no reason for him to be hostile to them, except unless he took, you know, their attack on the base as a big affront. But it looks like it was mostly clones that was were killed in that rather than
people. Yeah, I was about to say, like, I love my clones. But why would he care about the clones?
And look at the clones. The clones are, and the Jedi are amazingly forgiving over, you know, a whole base full of them being wiped out like that, you know?
Yeah, and though I wonder if it's because we're still so early in the season, maybe the clones still see a lot of themselves as disposable. Like, even with the rookies and, you know... Not with rookies. Any of the episodes, the early Malevolence episodes with Plo Koon, you know, the clones were like, well, we're disposable. And he's like, I don't think you're disposable. So we're still in these early seasons. And Yoda did the same thing, like ambush.
But at the same time, I mean, they're a military unit. And when you do that, you're all part of this, you know, if you're in the army, you're in the army. Every man in the army is your brother or whatever. And even in our human armies, you're a soldier. Soldiers, there's an element of expendability insofar as that's your job is to maybe die. So so you might be going into something where everybody's going to die, but you have to get your objective oriented. So, you know, to see your own people like wiped out, it would almost instantly make them be like, and granted, we didn't get any scenes of the clones like, hey, what's going on here? Let's go kill these buggers, you know?
That was a really good impression, Chris.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go on.
And there was nothing like that because it was sort of all from, it was all from the Jedi's point of view and the ambassador and the Tals. And the clones were just sort of swept up in it as ancillary characters who had to just sort of do their job. So you didn't really get, like, the clones' opinion as much in this. But when it came down to not kill it, you know, killing all the Tals off, they did a really good job of being like, well, yeah, we might have screwed up in this and disturbed the indigenous people. So it's kind of our bad.
Yeah.
It's very big of them is what I'm saying.
Now that you said that, I kind of wish we had more episodes where like Anakin would look at Rex and be like, what do you think, buddy?
Yeah.
That would have been, like, really cool and be like,
I say we let him go.
What? Nothing, sir. Let's all go get beers. Yeah! Sit around with the Talls and they're slipping through their slurpee straws. Having beers.
Exactly.
The only other note I had for this section is I just really love the entire scene of Obi-Wan and Anakin meeting with the Talls. The Jedi are, like, smart enough to realize that they're sentient, and, you know, like, Anakin realizes they're peaceful, and Anakin draws pictures to communicate with them, and, like, Obi-Wan gets a bear hug at the end. Like, that's just the entire section. It's really short, but it's a really nice section to show, like, the Jedi are good at what they do.
That's, I like this aspect of the Jedi. This is more what I really would like. You know, in my idealized version of a Jedi is rather than a kick-ass lightsaber warriors are people who are able to do this. It's, you know, Anakin's like, we don't even speak their language. And Obi-Wan's just like, just relax. You know, we'll relate to them and figure it out. And he does. And he not only does, but he totally, you know, befriends them by being respectful and honoring their, you know, their space, their civilization. And that's what I like about, that's what I always pictured the Jedi Knights more. And you know, I think a lot of that was based on Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars, you know, episode 4.
Yeah. Which,
and this is very Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, very much not using violence and improvising and letting it unfold, you know, letting the situation unfold. And just making sure that he stays peaceful and centered and all that, and letting the Force just sort of, and it works. It works gangbusters, you know. I think Obi-Wan Kenobi's take on the Force seems to be one of the most effective in the whole Star Wars universe stories that we've seen.
Yeah. That just that entire section was just really nice. And even Anakin picks it up. Like, Anakin's like, okay, and he doesn't know how to communicate with them, and he ends up drawing pictures for them.
He's resistant at first, but then once he sees it going, and it's very much like a couple episodes back, it's a kind of a reversal of during the Malevolence arc when Anakin was winging his attack on the Malevolence, and Obi-Wan was like, all right, what are we doing? And he's like, well, I don't know, we're going to figure it out as we go along. And Obi-Wan is like, oh, okay. But then once they got going, you know, Obi-Wan's going right along with it. This is just a reversal of Obi-Wan bringing him along. And then once he gets the cues of what they're doing, he's right on board and playing and working along with it.
Yeah.
So much in the, I mean, so much stuff crammed in this episode.
This is such a great episode.
And then we get the short third act, and they have to cram all the rest of it in that amount of time. It's
This is a very packed, like, it's literally like the last 4 minutes.
Yeah.
So, here we go. Act 3. The chairman's men with Rex spot the Tals and start a battle. The Tals prove to be better warriors than presumed as they ambush the clones and the chairman. They have no choice but to retreat and run from the Tals, but the chairman is hit with a spear. Rex takes Chicho on a speeder and runs. Back with the Jedi, the Speaker of the Assembly of Pantora gives Chuchi the right to speak on behalf of Pantora and negotiate peace. Chuchi wants the Jedi to do the job since they have more experience. Obi-Wan tells her it's Pantora, not the Jedi, at war with the Tals. It's up to her and her alone to end the conflict. The battle is escalating as the Tals relentlessly attack Rex's men. Trapped with only a handful of clones left against the army of Tals, Rex puts up a hell of a fight to protect the chairman. Luckily, the Jedi arrive just in time with reinforcements. Chuchi goes to the dying chairman. Chicho wants Chuchi to avenge... Chicho wants Rio. I'll call her Rio. Rio to avenge him, but she says the assembly has called him out of order. Wrong and shit out of luck, the chairman dies. Chuchi then takes C-3PO with her and approaches the leader of the Tals. She says that one of the best lines in the series, saying, "To die for one's people is a great sacrifice. To live for one's people is a greater sacrifice. I choose to live for my people. What do you choose?" The Tals leader chooses to end the conflict and end the war. Rio recognizes them as a free and equal people, leaving the planet under their protection. Obi-Wan gives her one final challenge: be an example and make the peace last.
You know, it's funny, that line that you quote is one that I kind of have a problem with the phrasing of it.
Really?
Because, yeah, I don't think to live for one's people, I think if you wanted to make it make more sense, it would be to die for one's people is a great sacrifice, to live for one's people is a greater risk. Because I don't think it's a sacrifice, it's actually to your eventual, you know, it's not a sacrifice basically this is about compromise is what it's saying, is instead of wiping each other out, we will compromise and we'll, and that's a positive thing. I don't think that's a sacrifice. It wasn't like a face palmer for me, but I was just like, I need to parse those words and figure out if I totally agree with this.
I just love that moment with Rio.
This is a very science fiction-y and kind of a Star Trek-y episode where really, you know, and once it resolves, all the conflict in this came, this story that we see on screen, comes from basically just from Chachi, from one asshole. My line is the bullshit of war. That's the bullshit of war, is like, all these people had to die in this story, Tals and clones and even Chachi, just because of one asshole. One person decides he's going to be an asshole. Everybody there is willing to figure out what's going on and be the Tals. Everybody's, you know, willing to have a meeting of the two new races and work things out peacefully. One guy there messes everything up, and then all of a sudden people who don't even really want to fight each other are having to kill each other. And it's just lucky that everybody's very reasonable. And when it's over, usually it doesn't resolve like this. Usually the Tals would be like, hey, screw you guys. We have 50 dead people here. You know, we're not going to compromise. But the Tals were like, okay, all right. We notice a jerk is dead. Everybody else is cool here. All right. You know, nope. No harm, no foul.
It's like Obi-Wan said, like, maybe they're smarter than you are.
Yeah, and maybe they are, you know. They just might not be more technological.
Yeah, there's a difference between smart and technology.
Yeah, and they turn out to be, you know, I mean, you have the guy saying they're animals, and they are deadly. They're deadly. They're taking out clones, and they're not doing it with lasers and stuff. They're doing it with clubs and sticks and throwing spears.
Yeah, they take out most of Rex's men, and because they're tactical, too. Like, they're, like, hiding ahead of the speeders and just popping out of the snow and just smacking them off speeders.
And they look like big, top-heavy, big-headed, weird, alien-like, alien Bigfoots. But they when they attack, they're more like a lion or something. They're very, very swift and deadly and accurate. And so you think maybe they're going to be a warlike society. But they aren't really. They're actually seem very mellow, man. They seem like they'd be like cool to hang out with.
With their Slurpee straws.
Yeah, it looks like they spend their time in a nice hot tent, probably eating some sort of weird psychedelic fungus that grows.
I like their little lion cats that they ride. I don't know what they're called, but those little lion cats. Oh, those are cool.
I love the sound design of those things.
Yeah.
It doesn't really stand out until one of them gets shot, but they yelp like dogs when they get shot. And it's just very, very nice sound design, very nice creature design. They're sort of similar to the lizard lion creatures that we saw in the Lerman world in some ways,
yeah.
But they have more of that sort of weird feathery. It's almost like, long scales that stick up like feathers. It's really weird. I couldn't quite tell what the texture of them were supposed to be, but they looked really cool. They looked like they could puff up their feathers, but they could also lay them down flat onto their skin like armor, probably. You know, it was
like
really neat.
Lizards that have the little poofs.
Yes, yes.
I'm glad you knew what that meant. Oh, so. My shallow note of this is I love how Rex is like, why are we fighting? Chairman, you're not my general. Shut up. You're getting my men killed. He had that line of like, with all due respect, we're not supposed to be fighting.
Yes. Obi-Wan's a little preachy in this last part, but that's okay. He kind of deserves to be, you know, preachy right there.
He was right all along.
Yeah. 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 If everybody would have listened to him, everybody'd be alive right now.
Girl moment kind of reminded me of an episode of My Little Pony.
Oh, jeez.
Because there's an episode about the Super Cider Squeezy 6000, and these two brothers called the Flim Flam Brothers come to town, and they're preaching how they can make, like, the best cider in town with their, like, crazy, like machine and stuff. So Applejack's like, no, we make it because we have quality and care, and we take our time. And at the very end, she's writing her letter to Princess Celestia, and she's like, dear Princess Celestia, I was right all along. That's what it reminded me of. Okay, so I have to have my Rex moment. Ready?
Here it comes.
Okay, here it comes. This episode has two of my favorite Rex moments in it, of like the entire series. The first is like when the Tull's cat guy jumps on his speeder and he launches out of the thing. He lands on his feet and then charges him with blasters. It's just such a badass moment.
Yeah.
And he's so cool. And the other moment is like when he's fighting and they're like, they're stuck against the ledge and like Chicho is dying and like all his men are like down and shooting. Rex just stands up and just starts walking and shooting and like just kind of like barely moving his shoulder like from a spear and just walking and shooting. Like, that's such a cool moment. Like, my baby's such a badass. He even runs over a guy with a speeder. Like, there's a Tal's about to like to like get the senator, and he just like crashes into it with a speeder and just knocks it away. Oh man, he's such a badass this entire episode. I love him.
That's why he's alive in Rebels.
What?
That's why he's alive in Rebels right now.
Oh, God, he's so good in Rebels, too. Oh, man, Chris, last episode was so good.
I'm way behind, so I'm going to have I have the next 2 days off after today, so I'm probably going to do a catch-up. I'm probably due for a catch-up session and watch
this
all of
Wednesday,
them.
This Wednesday, it looks like it's the episode where Ahsoka and all of them go to the Jedi Temple.
Ah, okay. I figured that's going to be towards the end. That was what they were going to tease towards.
So the last episode was one that I've been wanting to happen. Do you know who Agent Kallus is? Like the smarmy guy,
yeah.
Zeb and Kallus get stranded together on an ice planet, and they have to survive together.
So it's gonna be like, yeah, it's gonna be like the Grievous episode a few episodes back, where he's chained to Anakin and Obi-Wan type of thing, right? Sort of an odd couple,
but better.
Oh, good.
Because I actually really like Kallus as a villain. And, like, Kallus is one of... I am a very firm believer that you have to have a good villain to have a good hero, right? And so I really love villains a lot. Like, they're some of my favorites. And Kallus has been one of my favorite villains and Rebels, and I think he's so good. But this episode gives him layers, and it shows that, like, yeah, the Empire is bad, but he has his beliefs, and he actually talks about how, like, atrocities Rebels have done to his people.
I just like how sometimes Star Wars will just give somebody a name that describes them. You got Kallus, Grievous.
Tarkin just sounds gross.
Tarkin just sounds mean, and Darth Vader just sounds evil. But like Kallus and Grievous, Grievous is sort of spell. Well, you know, Grievous sounds more like egregious. And Kallus is just spelled differently than Kallus, but it sort of partially a good description of both of them.
Yeah, but last week's episode of Rebels with Zeb and Kallus was probably my favorite episode of the season so far.
Ooh, excellent.
And that's saying something. I really liked the episode where Ahsoka took on the Inquisitors. That was a really good episode too. Except for Ezra's kind of a dumb fuck in that episode, but that's okay. I like Ezra, but I certainly don't love him. Everyone's like, save the blueberry! And I'm like, oh, I have to tell you some bullshit about Rebels. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so it blows my freaking mind. There was an episode recently where, like, Ezra was, like, the golden child, and he was talking to space whales and stuff like that, and they were like, look at Ezra's force abilities. And I'm sitting here going, it took Ahsoka 6 seasons of Clone Wars, over 3 years, to get this far, to be as advanced as Ezra is in about a season and a half. And I'm like, this is like, the pacing for Rebels is so fast. And I put it on Twitter. I was like, you know, the pacing for Rebels is so fast, and it's so, like, crazy. As a viewer, I was thinking, like,
well,
maybe...
Well, that's similar because the complaints about Rey, too, in Force Awakens.
Yeah,
that might be something that we're gonna have to get used to.
But I was like, as a viewer, I was thinking maybe 6 months had passed in the course of season one and this half of season two, like maybe 6 months, a year tops. Pablo Hidalgo, I love you, thank you for all your hard work. Messaged me back on Twitter and was like, no, it's been over 2 years since the pilot. What? When did 2 years pass?
Wow.
When did 2 years pass? Okay, yeah, then it
I
makes
don't
sense
see,
that, like,
yeah.
Like, then it makes sense that Ezra is, like, you know, getting advanced in his force abilities. I get that then, because he's been practicing for 2 years, and after 2 years, Ahsoka was doing that well, too. I get that. But where are the time cues in the episode? Like, it doesn't feel like 2 years have passed since they found him on Lothal.
No, I would have put it at about 6 to 8 months.
I was thinking no more than a year tops.
Yeah.
And so, to me, like, it makes Ezra look like he's some sort of, like, Gary Stu, because he can finally do all these force abilities, and it makes sense, you know, if it has been 2 years. Yeah, he practices every day, he's with Kanan. I get that then, but there are no time cues to say, like, man, remember 2 years ago when you guys picked me up on Lothal or something?
Well, yeah, they should give cues in the story sense. I think that's better, because then it's like, okay... There was a lot of downtime that we didn't see in the show. So the little more than season and a half that we've seen spans 2 years. So he had an actual reasonable amount of adventures in that sort of time. Whereas usually, like with a lot of these cartoon shows, it's like, Do these guys, it's like every day they have to be, you know, having an adventure to fit all this stuff in. It's like MASH ran longer than the war did.
Yeah.
So maybe it makes a little more sense if you add up all the stuff that they did that took place in 2 years, but it does not feel like 2 years. The characters don't look, I mean, really the only characters that should probably be looking any different significantly would be Ezra, because he's the youngest and
Sabine changed her hair. That's the only difference.
Yeah, but the other characters are old enough, so a year or two isn't going to look too much different on them. But on Ezra, a year or two could look quite different and could sound different in his voice, you know?
And that's why, like, you know, with Clone Wars, for one, it feels like 3 years. Like, you know, it's paced out slowly enough that it feels like 3 years of battle. The second thing, we see Ahsoka age. You know, we see her age over the course of 3 years. Right. Her leku are get longer. She, you know, she changes her outfit. She's taller than she is when she starts the series. I mean, we see Ahsoka age. And so it makes sense with her. But I agree. Like, you know, give him some peach fuzz.
Yeah, he should be getting into the, you want some fries with that, sir?
Kanan, there's Inquisitors.
Darth Vader will show up. It's you again, young Jedi. I'm strong in the Force.
So, like, that is an issue
Don't
I'm having.
Be so
with
sure of yourself, you master of evil.
And meanwhile, Zeb still has his deep growly voice. Oh man, I'm so sad. Steve Bloom is coming to MomoCon in May, and I'm probably not going to get to go to MomoCon, but I really want to see him just because I want to be like, hey, do Zeb.
Come on, do it.
I want to hear you talk to Zeb. Actually, I just think he'd be really cool to me because he's actually voiced a lot of characters in a lot of shows that I love, so Steve Bloom is very talented. But yeah, that's just a big old issue I have with Rebels right now is it how over two years. Pablo said two or more years. I don't get it.
Maybe I'll catch up tonight. You're getting me all revved up for it.
Last week's episode was really good. The two episodes before it. Actually, the Lasada episode was good on the second watching. I didn't like it the first watching, but I appreciated it much more the second watching. That I don't like the space whales.
I got so much. I got Better Call Saul to catch up on. I got The Walking Dead to catch up on. I got my Rebels to catch up on.
The space whales.
It's kind of a nice problem to have, though, that I actually am not, like, actively waiting for something. I have to actually keep up with my genre viewing these days. It's great.
I'm the same way. Like, there's a lot of shows I really want to see right now, but I'm just like, but Project Runway is on. I could watch Daredevil, but Project Runway is on.
Oh, I guarantee you Daredevil is so much better than Project Runway.
Excuse you, they're in All-Stars now.
I'm just saying, you'll see. I know you, and I watched Daredevil. It's like condensed awesomeness. It's very good.
Part of it is also, I know, like, once I start Daredevil or Jessica Jones, I'm just going to lose, like, 4 days of my life. And I have deadlines to do, and I have stuff to do. So I know if I sit down and start watching it, I'm going to fall behind on all my work. So I'm waiting for, like, a two-day period where I know I have nothing, which is very few and far in between.
I know Daredevil Season 2 is coming. I don't know exactly when it's supposed to start. But, yeah, you might want to time that. You could time that 4 days a little closer to Season 2 so you can jump right into Season 2.
Yeah, and also, like, I've been seeing Marvel Comics have been doing little promos for Daredevil. And it's really cool because in the comics they have, like, a nice little spreadsheet. And it has the cast, but if you hold it away from your face, the way the smoke is in this thing, you can see the Punisher.
Ooh, nice.
Like, yeah, you can see his image, like his logo made out of smoke if you hold it away from your face.
Well, for someone who's a fan of a certain time period of Daredevil and not, I don't have that many superhero comics that I've read enough about so that I can see, you know. Usually seeing the superhero movies to me is sort of like, I'm walking, like Deadpool. I only read one Deadpool comic on your, because you made me get Chris to read a goddamn superhero comics in Comics Monthly Monday. It's the only one I ever read. So I'd just walk into him like, all right, now I'm going to learn about this character or, you know, or, or I know about the character, but I don't read the comics, but I know who the character is, or I've read a few of them in the 80s. But with Daredevil, I was I read a lot of them in a certain time period, and this is just that come to life. And from the previews of season two, the Punisher looks really good. He looks about like what the Punisher's supposed to be like. And then it's got Elektra in it, and she looks about like what she's supposed to look like, and that's a good thing. Looking forward to it.
So he doesn't look like Matt Damon?
No. No, he looks like Matt Murdock. He looks like Matt Murdock. He looks like a ginger, a scrawny ginger emo guy. It's a thing nowadays. Everybody's a little too skinny for their role, I think. So he's a little too slight and skinny, but he can fight, and they capture the martial arts element of it really well. And the Kingpin was perfection.
That's what I hear. I heard Kingpin was
perfection.
Spot on.
Yeah, perfection. It's Vincent D'Onofrio. He's great. And it's very well done. Very well done. In the first episode, they got these two characters, Turk and Grotto, perfect. And you didn't even know it was Turk. They weren't even mentioned by name, but like to someone who'd read the comics, I'm like, it's Turk. Where's Grotto? There he is. Yes. And what happens in that scene is very much, it's perfect, pitch perfect. But anyway, that's Daredevil.
So, yeah, I only had one other note for Act 3, which I'm going to continue my choo-choo note from Act 1. Ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so let's talk about her for a second.
This is what I was saying. This is where her arc, her character develops here.
Yeah, because she's, like, an incredibly young woman, like I said, and she was right all along. And she never wanted a conflict and saw the Talls as an equal people from the get-go. And unlike the chairman who was corrupt with power, she knew that peace could be achieved. And that's an incredibly brave and smart thing to do.
She
like
did
her
the right thing.
Yep. Yeah, her instincts were dead on. And even though she was like really scared to lead, she did it with grace and poise. And she saved everyone who was still alive. And she saved their lives. And she's a model for women that you don't have to be a gunslinging badass to be a strong woman. Like, it's such a trope where, like, only badass female characters have to have guns and they have to be able to fight. No. Chuchi is smart, and she's quiet, and she's poised, and she's graceful. And I wish they would use Chuchi more in the series, because she's a favorite of mine, and she only really has one other major episode, which is a really sad point for me.
Well, this is an example of why I like this better than the pacifists were so annoying in the last one. Here, I don't think she's a pacifist, but she uses pacifism to solve this situation. She is into the, you know, let's solve this situation nonviolently, and she's correct, and eventually stops the guy who's just ready to just wipe everybody out, get everybody wiped out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very nicely done.
I love her. She's one of my favorite female characters in Star Wars. She's such a badass. I really do wish they used her more. But they don't. She only has one other episode. And for the rest of the time, she's stuck in the background. I want to see, like, a girl episode. Like, her and Ahsoka. Well, we have her and Ahsoka in the episode. But, like, they're, like, Padme and Satine in there. And it's just all the girls. Girls! That'd be great. Girls! Alright. Well, did you have anything else for Act 3?
Nope, that's about it, I think, for me.
So, what did you think about the episode as a whole?
I really like this episode. It doesn't slow down for half a second. It just goes and goes and goes and goes. And with episodes like that, you could get away with a lot of, you could have a lot of fudginess in it and stuff, and just, you're just flying past it. But on top of that, it doesn't really have much fudginess to it. It's all good. And there's a lot of it crammed in, so I like the look of it an awful lot. As I said, this is the most Ralph McQuarrie looking Clone Wars I can remember. Maybe there'll be some more, and there's a lot of very painterly and illustration like aspects to Clone Wars, but they, like, a lot of them remind me of like the Hildebrandt brothers or cover art. This one had that feel of Ralph McQuarrie, and I like that a lot of it took place in the dark, or in the sort of twilighty. It was not a very, it's a snow planet, but it's snow in the nighttime, which is really moody and awesome looking. So I gave an 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I just realized the Jedi never once drew their lightsabers in this episode.
No, yeah, you're right.
Is that the first time they've gone through an entire episode with no lightsabers?
Maybe. I'd have to check on that, but I think so.
Yeah, because Anakin started reaching for his, but he never actually lit it.
They weren't fighting off lasers a lot. A lot of times it's to fight off lasers, and I think the Jedi also wanted to keep down their aggression. You know, a lit lightsaber swinging around is a very aggressive thing, and I think, you know, I think the Jedi really actually were probably more siding with the Talls than than the other guys that they were escorting. So I think maybe they purposely decided not to pull the lightsabers out to be more peaceful looking, you know, to not be as disruptive.
Yeah. Well, this is one of my favorite episodes of season one, if not for, like, the entire series. Like, I just really love this episode a lot. Ryo Chuchi is a shining example of how to do a good female character that doesn't need to be a gunslinging badass. And Rex is amazing the entire way through. I love Rex. And just the imagery and the setting of the entire episode is just beautiful. And I love how the weather is almost a character of itself. And it just helps with the tone of the narrative. And it's just a great episode overall. I gave it an 18 out of 20, which is like a solid 90%.
Solid 9 out of 10. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's one of my personal favorites. I told you guys we're in my favorite chunk of season one. So these are all going to be relatively high ratings.
It's going to be some Happy Hope episodes coming.
Happy Hope! Yeah, next week, though. Oh, do you know what next week is?
No, I don't.
We've been talking a lot about, like, referencing it. It's The Hidden Enemy, which is the episode with Slick, the betrayal clone.
The bad clone, the bad seed.
And yeah. Ventress is back. Like, 2/3 of the episode is clones, and then the other third is Ventress.
No,
so.
I'm missing Grievous, too. I miss him.
I
it's
don't.
That guy.
Good. Don't worry.
Mr.
Don't worry.
General.
I don't. To just stay in your hack zone.
General, my general.
So, yeah, next week. Please prepare for Rex feels, because you know you're going to get those from me. Rex and oh, man. Go ahead and prepare
it's
yourselves
gotta
now. It's got
to be one word.
For
Rex
a psychological explanation about how Rex is progressing as a character and Cody is not progressing as fast as Rex, and that's why he shoots Obi-Wan? Obi-Wan. And that's why Cody shoots Obi-Wan, is because of episodes like The Hidden Enemy. Just
Obi-Wan.
That's what's coming for next week. Well, as always, you can also find us on iTunes. If you write and review us, it helps people find the shows, and we'll read your review on the show. And where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, a podcast network. And I've recently also found out that Shag Matthews has launched his own podcast network in a blatant and... Frankly, I take it as hostile copycat operation of Two True Freaks.
What? That dickbag.
Did
love
you hear that? Yeah, I think we may have to kick him right in the dick bag.
Oh, Shag, you traitor.
I love
you so much.
At two, Shagus.
Why, Shag, why?
Poor Koi. Poor
we Koi. Love you. I thought I was your archenemy of podcasting.
But anyway, I digress. Apparently, they have, you know, we have Comics Monthly Monday, and they have a podcast called Bomics Monthly Monday.
Do they have another one called, oh, what was it in episode 4? Gay Guys and Jedi?
They have Gay Guys and Jedis.
Those dicks. Literally dicks.
They have Growing Up Star War.
Bar Wars?
Yeah, it's a Star War.
Just one war.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, they have Back to the Bibs.
Yeah, I'm waiting to Who True Beakers?
They have Who 2 Feet.
Who True Feet. Okay, so.
Anyway, Anyway, we have a myriad of comic books, Star Wars media, all kinds of media podcasts. We're getting ready, and maybe by this time, I imagine by this time we even have what is it called? Bots, Bugs, and Babes, which is a B movie podcast by one of them Jack and Eddie boys, Jason Jack and Eddie, the new addition to the Horror Vault. Yeah. I've listened to his first episode, and it's really good. He's got the whole Two True Freak thing down, and it's a solo podcast. Although he's getting guests on, but he knows his stuff, and he loves it. You can tell he just loves the movies. So it's one of those infectious podcasts. I'm looking forward to it.
My favorite B movie of all time.
Which one?
The Covenant.
Hmm.
Which is an early Sebastian Stan movie, like before, like, you know, Winter Soldier and Once Upon a Time and stuff like that. It's about a group of male witches.
I've never seen it, but I remember when.
Terrible but wonderful. And there's an entire scene where it's all just all the men walking around in the shower, and that's all that. That's the babes for me. I'm good. No, it's this just terrible B movie with boy witches.
Warlocks.
No, they're witches. Oh. They make a point. They're like, at one point they're like, suck it, Harry Potter, but they're like witches. They're not even warlocks, they're witches.
Interesting. Well, we got that coming. And yeah, just come to twotruefreaks.com. Check it out. I've got some changes on the way planned visually, but as it is, I think you'd be able to find some podcasts to your liking. What about you, Hope? Where the hell are you?
I am over at What the Fangirl, where I write reviews of various things like Clone Wars and comics and Being Human and TV shows and stuff. And I'm also working to get my personal website, Hero Experience, back on its feet after it suffered a terrible server crash. And that's just more like my personal musings and little things that... Pretty much what's on What the Geeky Girl Experience is things that my editor was like, you can only talk about Michael Sacca so many times on What the Fangirl. So that's kind of like where that is. So yeah, that's geekygirlexperience.com. You can find us at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter and find me at Hope Molinax at Twitter. Bow, bow, bow. I don't have anything else.
All right, that's a good way to go out. If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.